This is The Pulse, stories about the people and places at the heart of health and science. I'm Maiken Scott. This story is from our episode, Weighed Down. You can find us on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. Sugary beverages like soda are the single largest source of added sugars in the American diet. Now, some cities, for example Philadelphia, are trying out a new approach, soda taxes, which raise drink prices to discourage buying. This tax is controversial, and a big point of contention is whether it ends up hurting poor people. If you want to find ground zero for that debate, North Philadelphia is it. It's one of the poorest neighborhoods in the city, with lots of health challenges and obesity. It also has the most soda drinkers in the city. The tax is now over a year old, and Liz Tung went to see how it's hit people's waistlines and pocketbooks.
Medina Food Market sits on a crowded block filled with pawn shops, nail salons, and dollar stores. Above it, the L train rumbles by every few minutes. And at the deli inside, the lunch rush is just getting started. The shelves are lined with candy and chips and cans of Goya beans, and along the far wall, a refrigerator case is filled with soda.
Root beer, Sunkist, Fanta, Welch's strawberry soda, Mountain Dew,
orange. And at least a dozen more flavors, plus punch and iced tea and energy drinks. The selection is huge. But the shop's owner, Edward Medina, says soda isn't selling like it used to.
The stock is low now. It's very slow.
A distributor who's come in to drop off some stock confirms what Edward has to say.
It's hurting the small guys. They are not making money.
His name is Isam Latif. He works for a company that distributes iced tea and says he's seen falling sales inside Philadelphia and increased business just outside the city limits where there is no tax.
They are not making money. Why? Because the customer, they go buy from outside Philadelphia. And these guys, the store owners, are losing money.
Philadelphia soda tax doesn't just cover soda. It includes anything with added sugar, from energy drinks to sweetened kombucha. For example, Isam says the iced tea he sells has gone up 30 cents per bottle. 2-liter sodas are up by a dollar, and gallon jugs of drinks are up by $1.92. As we're talking, a woman with a stroller and blonde hair pulled tight into a ponytail comes in. Her name's Erica Burgess, and today she's buying a Sprite and a Coke. But she says this isn't a regular thing for her. Not since the tax passed.
Yeah, I noticed it. That's why I don't buy it that often.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I don't buy it that often.
So you buy it a lot less now?
Yes, a lot less. I say about maybe once a month anymore, and that's all we'll have.
How much did you used to drink soda versus now, you think?
Every day.
Every day?
Every day.
And now you can only buy it once a month?
Yes.
So it sounds like you're not a fan of the soda tax?
No, not at all.
Actually, it seems like everyone at this shop hates the soda tax. And so does the American Beverage Association. They represent industry giants like Coke and Pepsi, and they've poured millions of dollars into fighting the tax. In fact, in May of this year, the Beverage Association argued its case before Pennsylvania's Supreme Court. No decision has come down yet, but the group has continued to push out its message that the tax is hurting small businesses and poor neighborhoods. Public health officials, on the other hand, say that poor people are the ones that could benefit the most.
I love Philadelphia, but we are rock bottom for health, and we have been for a very long time.
Cheryl Bettigol heads up chronic disease prevention at the health department, and she says that of the 10 biggest cities in the U.S., Philadelphia is number one in obesity, number one in diabetes, and number one in early death from heart disease. And Cheryl says all of that is linked to the fact that Philly is also the poorest big city in the country.
There's no getting around the fact that poverty is the single most important factor. I mean, it is the core reason for those outcomes.
There are a lot of reasons why being poor is linked to obesity. People without money don't have as much access to healthy food and good health care. Plus, there's the fact that people living in poverty are stressed out. And junk food, including soda, can offer a little lift in their day, which Cheryl says the soda companies have figured out.
The predatory marketing of sugary drinks is absolutely a social justice issue. You know, you might decide in the morning that you're not going to have a soda today, but by the time it's 3 o'clock and you're tired and hungry and you've seen, 27 ads for soda and they're all, looking really attractive, you might grab a soda.
Cheryl says the soda tax is one way of making that decision a little harder. She emphasizes that that isn't its main purpose. The official purpose is funding education programs for lower-income kids. But the possibility of cutting soda consumption, especially in low-income areas, is a major plus. And she says it seems to be working.
What we're seeing so far, and it's very early days in terms of the data, looks really good. And, you know, when I talk to friends who see patients in inner city neighborhoods, they're also describing a dramatic drop in sweetened drink consumption.
That's supported by a recent study that surveyed almost 900 people in Philadelphia just before and after the tax passed. Lead author Yichun Zhong says that in Philadelphia,
The odds of the daily consumption of sugar soda dropped by 40% within the 2 months after implementation. And this drop is accompanied by an increase of the odds of daily bottled water consumption.
Compared with no change in nearby cities like Trenton and Camden, which are just across the river in New Jersey. Now, the study only looks at short-term effects. We still don't know whether those changes will last. But the findings square with what health officials have seen in places with similar taxes. For example, in Berkeley, California, sales of sugary drinks fell by 10% in the year after it passed its own tax.
Taxing high sugar, high fat beverages and foods can promote change at the population level.
David Sarwer says this is a good thing. He heads up the Center for Obesity Research and Education at Temple University.
The amount of sugar that we see in a regular soda is really staggering, that we don't think about it in terms of being the quantity that we really is. That if we took an equivalent amount of sugar and put it in front of somebody and said, I'd like you to eat this sugar, most people would choose not to because it would seem way too sweet and way too unhealthy. Yet we're readily able to drink these things.
Case in point, let's say you grab a nice frosty 20-ounce bottle of orange soda on a hot day. Along with your refreshing dose of citrus goodness, you're also consuming about 72 grams of sugar, which, to put it in perspective, is the equivalent of, say, an entire teacup filled with sugar. Now imagine doing that every day, even a couple times a day. Cheryl Bedigal, the public health official in Philadelphia, says that's exactly what a lot of people do.
Soda has become something that's gone from being an occasional treat to something people consume all day long. And that constant sugar in the bloodstream drives insulin production in the pancreas, which makes people hungrier, makes them gain weight, and makes it really hard not to keep drinking that same sugar.
Which, over time, can contribute to obesity and diseases like diabetes. That's why a lot of public health officials are so excited about the soda tax. Of course, that's public health people. People in the beverage industry, they feel a little different.
I think that by any measure, this tax has been a public policy disaster.
Anthony Campisi is the spokesman for the Coalition to Stop Local Food and Beverage Taxes. The group includes local businesses and is funded by the American Beverage Association. One of their biggest talking points is that the soda tax hurts the very people public health experts say it should help. People in low-income neighborhoods.
It's cost nearly 1,200 local jobs. It's devastating supermarkets, corner stores, and bodegas, particularly in poor neighborhoods in the city.
Those numbers are based on a study funded by the American Beverage Association. But Anthony says the findings are sound and could mean that small neighborhood supermarkets end up having to close.
And that, over the long term, has to have a negative public health impact. If there's no place to buy, you know, fresh fruits and vegetables and all the other things that, like, a supermarket provides.
Cheryl Bedigal, the public health official, says city data says otherwise. And of course, to be fair, we should point out that the city has its own stake in this.
The industry has been putting out lots of reports that jobs are being lost, but the jobs data and the wage tax data do not show that. Jobs in the beverage industry and in the grocery industry have, in fact, gone up, as has wage tax.
But Cheryl says all this bickering and back and forth might not be a totally bad thing, so long as it gets people thinking before they reach for that next soda.
The one plus of the beverage industry's multimedia push on this is that it is the single most effective public health campaign I have ever seen.
For The Pulse, I'm Liz Tung.